Game on 2FM. With Green Firm, a nourishing addition to any sandwich, salad, stir fry or snack. Natural protein your way.
Thanks to Jenny Green. Hello and welcome to Tuesday's Game On.
It's day one of the Cheltenham Festival and jockey Rachel Blackmore makes racing history.
The magnificent rider Rachel Blackmore rewrites Cheltenham Festival history. She becomes the first female rider to win the champion hurdle. It's her prize. Honeysuckle's brilliant. She's won the champion by 7 lengths.
Good on you, Rachel. We'll be heading over to Cheltenham to chat with Ruby very shortly.
Also, Mark Langdon joins us for our regular European football chat.
Messi! Just when they needed him, he comes up trumps.
And Gary Murphy talks golf and the form of Shane Lowry.
Keep trying my best and you never know. If I can put like that over the next sort of few months or even few weeks, you can always do something special, you know, up in Texas or over at Augusta. So we'll see how it goes.
We'll also be speaking to Lynn Savage of the LGFA.
Game on 2FM.
You can text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM and we would love to hear from you. Marie, how are we doing?
I'm good. More importantly, how are you doing considering the news today that CJ Stander is retiring from rugby? It's pretty shocking.
Yes. You saw me when I heard this news. We were chatting earlier on. We were on a bit of a FaceTime. I'm still quite pale over it. I'm shocked, Marie. I really am. Look, you want what's best for the guy in terms of his family and stuff, but I really didn't see it coming. I thought maybe he was holding out for a better contract. And as the contracts negotiation went on, I feared that a big team had come in with a massive purse for him. But I didn't see him stepping away from the game totally, which is what he's done. I suppose you look at his career, played for Munster Ireland and the British and Irish Lions, Munster over 150 times, you know, but it's just a bit of shock, I'll be honest with you.
I think everybody's shocked. And I was actually shocked to hear that the Ireland captain, Johnny Sexton, was shocked.
Yeah, shocked. Didn't see it coming. They called me into a meeting yesterday morning, him and Faz. And it was the last thing that I thought I was getting called in for. Look, he's done things for the right reason. His wife and daughter are back in South Africa at the moment. They've been there for a few months and they went back for the last lockdown as well. So it takes its toll, doesn't it? And he's just taken the decision based on family reasons and we respect him for that. But he's a big loss to Munster and Irish rugby. He's been huge for both teams over the last 5-6 years, you know what I mean? So, very shocked. But we wish him well and we hope that his last game in green will be one to remember.
I think it's because he's at the peak of his powers, Donica, and it's so rare for a sports person to make a decision when they are playing really good and they seem to be enjoying their sport and things are going so well for them. And, like, let's be fair, he would get another contract.
He 100% would get another contract. He'd get a contract from any team in the world. He is really a desirable player to have. And I suppose when you read his statement about just taking the stock take of his life and COVID allowed him to do that, and of course he is away from home, what a brilliant guy. He was in Munster when he came in. What a guy to buy in. You know, just within no time, it was like he was always there. I'd always look for a nibble out of the Limerick lads that the weather was poor, the facilities were bad there, something small, and the Limerick guys would always laugh at you, but CJ had nearly pinned you to the wall for saying a bad word about Limerick. And look, what an incredible player. We were chatting to Rory Best and it was brilliant to hear Rory say something that I just took for granted. CJ always fronts up. CJ always, he could be knocked back in a ball and he'll show willing the next time round. But it's going to be a massive loss, Murray. I know there's potential, and especially in green, there is loads of back rows coming through. But I think for Munster, this is, it's going to be a big void to fill because he never goes out and puts in a bad performance. He's 95% every week.
You can see that from just the people that have been come out playing tribute to him. And Sexton is actually one that really sticks out just because he's talking about his relentless attitude, his preparation, how tough he was. And to hear somebody like Johnny Sexton, who stands for so much in the game, talking so highly about him is pretty phenomenal.
And do you know what's going to be really sad for me? Just on Saturday, to see, like, he'll run out into the Aviva probably for the last time and there'll be no one there. And I think that's really sad because you'd like to show appreciation. I know Irish and Munster supporters, in actually everyone around world rugby, he's one of those players that you'd respect. And you'd love to, you know, just say thank you. And I suppose that is the tough part about COVID at the moment. That, but I'm sure CJ will know how much he's meant. And the big thing, Marie, always, you speak about it, it's legacy. What did you leave behind? Did you take the jersey and leave it in a better spot? And reading his statement, chatting about Anthony Foley and him filling that shirt as well, he certainly has, he's given it everything. And what an incredible guy. I hope he goes out in a high. I know Johnny Sexton was saying, let's send him off in a great way in green. I'd love to see that in red as well.
Yeah, well, they will be playing blue very, very shortly. And just on Leinster News, Leo Cullen has signed a 1-year contract extension. And interestingly, he just signed for the year because he wanted to sign for the year for his own personal reasons. And we often talk about what a year contract means for players. But Donegal, what does a year contract mean for a manager?
Yeah, it's another interesting one. I hope Leo isn't doing stock takes of his life. I think, you know, the sooner we get out of COVID, the better, because I think everyone's probably, you know, just re-evaluating and seeing where they're going. Look, there's no doubt in Leo Cullen. What a coach. What a Leinster man, true and true. And he's brought them to a different level in European rugby. He really has. If I was Leinster, I would try, or the RFU, I'd try to lock him down for as long as we could. But look, I think money does come into it. And if you're trying to acquire players, it does help if the main man is probably just taking as little as he can out of the trough so you can acquire the best talent around. So there was good news in hockey. Well, decent news in hockey today. Ireland drew with Great Britain. We were chatting to Roisin Upton, who scored again, Marie.
Again, yeah. So she put Ireland up against Great Britain, which was absolutely fantastic. Her third penalty over the three games. She's really, really good at them. But unfortunately, a late equaliser came from Great Britain. But I think when you consider just what we were talking to Roisin about yesterday and how much it was a big deal for them to even beat Great Britain, to come out in the series having lost 1-1 and drawn one, is pretty impressive. And also the fact that Great Britain are the Olympic champions, they're a fully professional side. It just shows how far this Irish team have come and how much they're going to be able to take from this and bring it forward to the Europeans, to the Olympics. They know now what they're capable of. They know that they can reach that high bar set by Great Britain. So I think overall it was a really good series for them. They'll learn a lot from it, from the three games, and they will come out very, very strong from it. They're going to have a lot of training camps now over the next few weeks and months and games as they prepare for the Europeans and for Tokyo. But I think definitely from listening to Roisin, that extra year from the Olympics obviously has seemed to work in their favour. They're going to be taking a lot from that time.
And her big point was competition for places. And when you probably see the results drawing this series with Great Britain, everyone's probably putting their hand up. And that's what you want. Like, that's going to be a nightmare selection for Sean Dancer. Like, he's really going to have to make tough calls to pair that back to 16 to represent us. But that's what you want. But yeah, a great way for us to be.
Well, let's hear from the Ireland captain, Katie Mullen.
There's so many positives for us, and I think, you know, we've gone through a lot of tough training the last couple of months, and you never really know where you're standing in international hockey until you go out and play games. And we have to take huge positives and huge pride in our performance in the last three games. And, you know, we'll be disappointed with the draw today, because we'll feel that we had the opportunities to put them to bed. But all in all, like, it's been a very successful series for us.
Absolutely has been such a successful series for them. Now let's turn our attention to Gaelic games. The GAA today and the Ladies Gaelic Football Association and Camogie Association have come together to launch a Gaelic Games player pathway that they hope will help to encourage and retain players at all levels of their sports. Lynn Savage, LGFA National Development Manager, joins us now. Lynn, it is a great initiative. We were going to get into it shortly, but first, it does feel quite significant to see the three associations united in developing this.
Hi Marie, hi Donegal, how are you?
Oh, it certainly
is, and I know it's a significant day for all associations to see this Gaelic Games Player pathway come to fruition, because it's been a long time coming together and making sure it matches the needs of the players, I suppose, is the main thing. But also, it's just one of a number of initiatives that we're working on together, and there has been a huge amount has gone before this. And I suppose there are a lot of things that don't be seen in the public eye in relation to the amount of initiatives and programmes we work on together, including things like Go Games, Cool Camps, the amount of committees that we're on. So this is great. It's another one, but with this one, it's really bringing us to the forefront. And I think there'll be plenty more to build on this also.
So, Lynn, just taking into consideration the conversations that are being had and the calls for the all the associations to go under one umbrella, and we see obviously moves with the GPA and the WGPA, and now we're seeing things like these collaborations. Do you think we're edging closer to one association?
Yeah, I think like all three associations have always said, it will get there. When the time is right and it's done the right way for everyone. And that's always been the commitment. I know you hear sometimes in the media there's certain associations holding it back, but being honest, that's just things you hear in the media. If they were working on our side of it, I actually think I work on more GAA committees at the minute than I do LGFA. But that's a positive thing, because at the end of the day, whatever we do, it's not about us, it's about grassroots. And that's very much what today is about as well. It's very much about grassroots. So, yes, everything, the MOU that was signed by the three bodies was about us working closer together. Games development was a central component of that. And I suppose this is a real part of that. And the first tangible piece we'll see out of this will be an introduction to coaching Gaelic games, which will be a foundation level coaching course as such. But it's the same one now across all codes. So, yeah, Maria, I certainly agree. There's a lot of stuff bringing us that way. But what's good is that we're doing it at a pace that's ready for everyone and that brings everyone rather than leaving anyone behind, because we're three big bodies. But I think it's important for people to understand the amount of things we're working on behind the scenes together and have been doing for the last number of years is phenomenal.
Lynn, just on it, you make the point, and it's so important that you come together for the most important things, and that's this player pathway that you've announced today. Can you just take us through it a little bit, just the foundation level that you've identified?
Yeah, so the player pathway was a big body of work, but one hopefully that's positive, and one of the main principles of it is the club is core. So for anyone who sees the imagery, you'll see very much the club is at the centre of this. And the reason that is regardless of the other opportunities a player gets, whether that's in talent academies or schools teams or college teams or getting on an adult inter-county team, they're still going to be, their club is still their core. So that's what's very much part of this. The other part is that it's player-centred. So yes, it is extremely important if I'm a nursery kid, which is a long time since I was a nursery kid coming into a club, but that I get the best coaching, the right support for me at that time. But then on the other hand, if it's a player at elite level, high performance, that they're getting the right coaching with the right support at the right time. So what's really exciting, I think, about this pathway would be the coach education that comes with it, because now I can actually become the best nursery coach in the country. It doesn't mean that I go into a room at a high-level coaching course and maybe there's a nursery coach and an inter-county manager in the same room. There'll be a pathway for both of us across both the foundation strand, the talent strand and the elite high performance. So it's very much about making sure the right support is there for the players at the right time to develop them at the pace they need to.
Because, Lynn, you want people to stay in sport. You want kids to stay in sport as well. You know, you don't want to see, you don't want to hear the numbers about the drop-off rates and things like this, because you're catering for everybody and not focusing on the elite. I can imagine it will make it such a better environment for everybody.
Hugely. And, like, I suppose the biggest thing is, as I said, this is player-centred. And, yes, it's probably going to be a bit onerous on coaches at times, because you are trying to be inclusive of everybody. But what we want is when people look at this pathway that they can see themselves in it. So whether you're a girl or a boy, in our case, if you look at our Gaelic for Mothers, which for most people would think, where do we fit into it? But they're very much in that F3 foundation space. They're part of the club. So it is very important that everybody can see themselves in it. But exactly, Marie, as you say, that the right things are being done, the right type of coaching. There's going to be a huge amount of coach education going to have to go with this. This is probably the easy step to publish a pathway. But everything that comes after it is going to be massive, because that's what will keep the kids, the adults in our game, is if they're in an environment that they want to stay in. And that's not easy with all the different environments that can be created. But for all of these development strands, we will be looking at the player, the game and the environment. So they're the three strands that we need to look at to make sure that what has been delivered for those players is optimum to keep them involved in our game.
Lynn, it sounds so important, and we were lucky enough to chat to Nora Stapleton last week. And what about that adolescent age girls? She was telling us there's such a drop-off rate. You know, I know you're looking for everyone, but is there a big focus on that area, girls that are out of the game at the moment, and attracting them back to it?
Yeah, like that has to be an area, and I suppose what research has seen over the last number of years is it's now not just an issue for girls. It's becoming a similar issue for boys around that age. So it is going to be important for coaches to focus on that. And I know even from, I can always speak on our own association with the Gaelic for Teens we have at the minute. And that's why we've had to do it. And the teenagers, when we were designing that, we thought we'd bring the teenagers together. They'll have great fun and they'll want to stay. But they went, no, you need to bring our coaches in and work with them and talk about the environment that needs to be created to keep us. So programmes like that are created by the teenagers. So that's where it's going to be important throughout this pathway, that when we are creating the coach education that goes with it, that we actually speak to our players and see what is needed in different elements of the pathway to keep, whether it's a teenager, a young kid, that even transition now, you can see the drop-off rates at times is getting younger as girls and boys go into secondary school, the same when they go into third level. So we need to look at all these points and see how can we make it easier, whether you're male or female, to stay involved in Gaelic games.
And Lynn, if people want to find out information about this pathway, how can they or where can they go?
Yeah, so everything has been put onto one portal, thankfully, to keep everything together. So if they go to learning.gea.ie/player pathway, and you'll see all the details there. There have been videos developed, there's guides developed, pretty much everything to go with the pathway. But we will be running a number of webinars over the coming weeks as well. So they'll be advertised across Camogie, the GA and LGFA, and everyone is more than welcome to come on just to get an understanding. And we also welcome feedback, because this is about grassroots and we need everyone to go together with us on it. So there has been a huge amount of work done, and a massive thank you to everyone involved behind the scenes for putting this together. But I do think it's going to be very positive for everyone involved in Gaelic games.
Definitely sounds it. Lynn Savage, LGFA National Development Manager, thanks for joining us. We're going to take a very quick break and then we're back with European football. 2FM.
Game on 2FM with Green Firm. Naturally good food packed with protein.
Game on 2FM. Welcome back. We have some very exciting news. Very, very shortly, we are going to be joined live by Rachel Blackmore. She is standing by with Ruby Walsh, and we will be chatting to her about the amazing day she just had on Honeysuckle. But first, we have to turn our attention to European football, because there are some Champions League games on tonight, and there is a lot happening as well in the world of European football. Mark Langdon of the Racing Post joins us. Mark.
Oh, good evening. Good evening. I'll be quick. I know you want to speak to Rachel, and I'm sure she's got much more to say than me.
I felt a bit bad there. I was building up Rachel then, but first we have to do this football thing. But you know, the one thing that I am very excited about, as you well know, and also very interested and confused about, is the Euros. And today there was a little bit of news that Dublin have been given a glimmer of hope as UEFA have extended the deadline for Euro 2020, the host cities to get things in order. Mark, am I having false hope here?
Well, I still think it's going to be very close because the date has only been extended to April the 20th. UEFA have announced that they, in an ideal world, they would want 50% stadia for the games. They will accept 25%, but there's a lot of countries in Europe, and even those that are more bullish than others, that I don't see how you could absolutely say for certain that you would be able to deliver this. But certainly from UEFA's point of view, they want to hear sort of government say yes, we'll be able you know, to fulfill this. They're very reluctant to give it to one country. Of course, England have sort of put their name forward as somewhere that could host the whole tournament. They are, I think, still committed to trying to take it around Europe, but they have set this deadline of April the 20th. That's a couple of weeks later than initially, so they are putting it back and giving everybody as much chance as possible. I mean, as I said right at the top there, though, it's very difficult for any government to say we can do X, Y, or Z at this time, but UEFA want to at least know that sort of promise has been delivered, even if I suppose you don't fulfil it.
I guess they'll have to make a call at some stage. Right, there are games on tonight. Manchester City and Mönchengladbach. The game, I suppose, when you look at it, really, Mönchengladbach have lost their last six games, so I can't imagine they're going to trouble City too much.
No, I wouldn't have thought so. The Gladbach season has fallen apart since their coach, Marco Rosa, announced that he'd be joining Borussia Dortmund at the end of the season, as you mentioned, on this terrible losing run. A completely different team to what we saw.
We've lost Mark. I think he might have taken offence to us getting so excited about Rachel Blackmore. Mark, are you back?
Madrid. Hello.
You're back. Can you hear us, Mark?
Yeah, sorry, I don't know what happened. Yeah, Gladbach, I can, hello?
Yep, we have you. We have you, Mark.
Hello?
Hey, Mark, can you hear us?
Oh, sorry, so Gladbach, yeah, completely different. Yep, I can hear you. Okay, Gladbach are a completely different team. Before Christmas, they knocked Inter out at the group stage. They were competing very well with Real Madrid. Since Rosa announced he was departing their season, not the only team that's happened to. You can think of other instances in the past where maybe the manager, the players look around and think, well, if the manager's not committed, then, why should I be, I suppose?
Mark, the other game, Real Madrid are taking on Atlanta, one goal up. Hazard's injured and Zinedine Zidane can't explain it.
No, I won't say, I won't use the exact words he used to describe this latest injury, but he's flabbergasted that Hazard has picked up yet another injury. Zidane is quite sweary in his press conferences and he didn't hold back on this one. I mean, Zidane, I think is getting frustrated. He's tried to protect Eden Hazard. He was, of course, the Galactico signing season before last. He was expected to come in and be the real star for Real Madrid. Injury after injury, we've basically seen about 3 weeks of a good Eden Hazard in the whole time he's been at Real Madrid. Absolute disaster financially of a signing for them. You can say it's unlucky, but other people would say that he doesn't live exactly the most professional life. He turned up at Real Madrid overweight and basically just hasn't been able to get himself fit ever since then. It's a tricky game against Atalanta. Atalanta, inconsistent team, but are capable on their day. I think the fact that they had a player sent off so early in the first leg contributed to a bit of a no-show from them. I'm expecting a better game. You would imagine that Real Madrid, with that 1-0 advantage, should have enough to go through, but it should be I'm expecting a much better second leg.
Both of those games kick off at 8 o'clock. Now to international news, and Zlatan Ibrahimovic has been recalled to Sweden's national team. Okay, he's 39 years of age. We know that he definitely thinks that he's able for it. Do you think he's able for it?
Yes, he is. I mean, if you have a look at the way that he's played for Milan this season, their form has tailed off a little bit in recent weeks, and I don't think that's anything really to do with Ibrahimovic, who's been out injured anyway. It's more just the fact that they were punching above their weight initially to get so close to the leaders in Italy. But if you have a look at Ibrahimovic's form, sort of even when he was in America and he was scoring a lot of goals for LA Galaxy, I think he realised then that he'd made that move a little bit too soon. He's a very fit guy that is, we've never relied on his pace anyway. It was all about the intelligence and his hold-up play. He'd always said previously that he wasn't interested in a recall to the national team and that time had passed. But I suppose you should never ever write anything off with Ibrahimovic. The way his return to European football has been fantastic. If he does decide to go to the Euros, I'm sure it'll be a tick in Sweden's box and give them something that they haven't really got at the moment up front.
Mark, there was news. Ronaldo beat Pelé's record with the perfect hat trick, all within 32 minutes.
He did, yeah. I mean, just days after Juventus had been knocked out of the Champions League, and Ronaldo had sort of headline after headline, Juventus wanted to give him away for free because they felt that his wages were just too much of a drain on resources, and there's even suggestions he could go back to Real Madrid. And why is Ronaldo not been able to deliver for Juventus and win them the Holy Grail of the Champions League in Serie A. He then sort of responded with that hat-trick, as you say. The thing is, Juventus didn't spend all of that money on Ronaldo for him to score a hat-trick against Cagliari, as good as that was. They expected him to score those goals against Porto and Lyon and Ajax in those Champions League games when they went out.
And of course, Messi is still doing it. And Koeman today said that he is the most important player in the history of Barcelona, and lucky he is still with us.
Yeah, I mean, he equaled the Barcelona club appearance record set by Xavi Hernandez with his 767th appearance for Barcelona in the 4-1 victory over Huesca on Monday night. He scored 661 goals in those 767 matches, and he's got 27 this season. Not bad for a player that barely got going in the first 10 weeks of the campaign, and all the talk of whether he would be leaving Barcelona. I think this is now all part of a really big push. Can they get Messi to stay at Barcelona? Paris Saint-Germain want him, Man City want him, Barcelona are desperate to keep him. He's showing, and I think he became really annoyed when there were people questioning how much money he earned, and was he too expensive for Barcelona. His performances in the last few months have been as good as ever, which is saying something given how good he has been.
Mark, when we look at PSG, then some of the players, their houses were burgled while they were actually playing.
Yeah, so it was a shocking result on the pitch because they lost 2-1 against Nantes, but it was sort of after the game. I think it was kind of became clear as to maybe why they lost that game from being 1-0 up at half time. News was filtering through at half time that I think it was Marquinhos, the centre back, his parents' house had been burgled, and then there was, in the second half, you saw this really weird sort of conversation play out between Leonardo, the sporting director, in the stands on the phone to Maurizio Pochettino, the manager, who was in the dugout. Pochettino then made a substitution, subbed off Di Maria and walked him down the tunnel. And then it later came out that during the game, they'd heard that Di Maria's house was burgled in a very scary situation for his family that were inside at the time. So Pochettino quickly got him off the pitch, sent him home to be with his family. As I say, PSG lost the game. This is not the first time it's happened to Di Maria either. A lot of people questioned his kind of motivation when he was at Manchester United, but his family were robbed in similar circumstances, and I don't think they ever really sort of recovered and fell in love with Manchester after that situation. And terrible news for him that it's happened again just days after he'd signed a new contract to stay at Paris Saint-Germain.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's hope we're talking about all the action on the pitch tomorrow. Mark, thanks so much for joining us on Game On. Quick break and we're over to Cheltenham to chat with Ruby and history maker Rachel Blackmore.
FM. Game on 2FM with Green Fern, a 100% natural range of cooked chicken, turkey and beef. Natural protein your way.
Gary Murphy joins us on the line to talk golf. Look, Gary, another absolutely thrilling Players' Championship over the weekend. And Lee Westwood, I know he didn't win and it was Justin Thomas, but I think the player that is on everyone's lips is Lee Westwood and what he did over the last two weekends, really.
We've been blessed, really, the last few weeks, Murray, with the golf. It's been, improving every week. The entertainment value has been great. Everyone's kind of sat at home craving for sport to entertain them. And from the golf point of view, it's been brilliant. A huge event last week, massive prize fund, the flagship event. And he kind of had, as Westwood said, the rematch on Sunday with himself and Bryson DeChambeau. And you have to say Westwood's a credit to himself. He's 48 in a few weeks, I think. And all the chat nowadays is about the young kids coming through, and rightly so, because there's some fantastic players. But Westwood, in the last 2 weeks, has really ripped many pages off the calendar, and it's been great to see, because it just goes to show that golf, if you continue to apply yourself, it doesn't really matter what age you're at. There's still some good golf left in Lee Westwood, and he's going to be definitely on Harrington's team for the Ryder Cup in September.
Gary, it was great to see him back it up. Like you mentioned there, 2 weeks in a row being in contention. But how good was Justin Thomas?
He was phenomenal. For a guy who, I think at one stage on Friday, looked like, early on Friday, he looked like he was possibly going to miss the cut. And then he had a huge round on Saturday to get himself right in the mix. And as we've seen with Thomas throughout his career, when he gets a sniff, it's very rare that he doesn't convert those opportunities to wins. I can only really remember Memorial a couple of years ago where he had a chance to win and he blew it. So really down the stretch, he's huge faith in his own ability. And considering what's happened to him off the course earlier on in the season, which really did jolt him, and he messed up, there's no doubt about that. But I think the fact that it was the first blip that he's had kind of off the course as such in his career, and then his grandfather passed away a couple of months ago and he was really close to him. So he had, you know, he had life kind of getting in the way a little bit, and he's responded, and this is a tournament that he hasn't won. It's a tournament that they all want to win, and it's a big prize for Thomas.
It didn't get in the way of his ball striking, though. It was so impressive.
Yeah, he kind of has that X factor. He's a bit like Tiger. I'm not saying he's as good as Tiger, because nobody is or probably ever will be, but he's similar to Tiger when he first came out, that he's very explosive. When he gets the chance to win, he seems to take it. You could just see with all the players on Sunday evening, like, there's so much on the line. There's obviously a lot of money, and I know these guys are really wealthy, but $2.7 million first prize would grab anyone's attention. And it's the notoriety of winning the Players' Championship. But as you say, Marie, his ball striking was sensational. He really... And it was a little bit kind of throwback to the old days where you see a lot of shape on and guys manufacturing shots, and he had a couple of tee shots coming down the stretch that were just phenomenal, and then he kind of did what he had to do in 17. And he was a worthy winner. I know it was only one shot in the end, but, you know, Westwood birdie the last one, the kind of tournament was over. I know it was worth a fortune in money, but Thomas did exactly what he had to do. He applied the pressure around the middle part of the round when there was some holes that were good scoring opportunities, and he took advantage of those more than the others, and that's why he got the win.
Gary, of course we're going to look to the Irish lads and we'll chat about Shane shortly, but Rory McIlroy has admitted that he's been trying to add length to his game, mainly being influenced by Bryson DeChambeau. Do you think this has detracted, and this is probably one of the main reasons we don't see him in the running like we have?
Yeah, I think so. He alluded to that on Friday, that he kind of last October went down chasing a bit of extra distance, which is bizarre really, because it's the one part of the game, of his game, that kind of sets him apart from the others. The only thing is that they're all the time fiddling around trying to find that little tiny percentile that is going to make the big difference. Even Bryson DeChambeau said it on Friday. You know, he was working on kind of a new move going out on Friday, and that's just the nature of golf. It's trying to, the challenge with it is, even though you're trying to make changes, they're pretty much similar to what you've always done, and I think Rory has possibly gotten away from what made him so great. I think we all know that, you know, he needs to improve in other departments rather than distance. But then, you know, it's probably no different to, I suppose, in rugby terms, when Lumo came out first, and, you know, he's this massive winger, and then maybe other teams are looking at, maybe we need to get big wingers rather than small little dinky guys. So it's just sport evolving within itself. It's a lesson learned. The big thing for McIlroy is that he's copped on pretty quick and he can try get back to where he was. He's possibly only got one tournament left before the Masters, which is a match play event, which, you know, can work both ways. He could play really well and get knocked out early, or he could go deep into the tournament. But I think you just have to admire his honesty, because very few players, especially a former world number one, would stand up and give away trade secrets and say that he was trying to chase another player. And I think you have to admire him from that, but it's definitely a lesson learned. He doesn't need to go down that road.
Is it wise for him to be giving away trade secrets? And for, you know, when he does talk about things like that, then obviously the focus then is on that, and you're asking why would he be trying to mirror what DeChambeau's doing? And then that raises an awful lot of questions, and it makes him the topic of conversation.
I think it's great from a media point of view because you get a bit of copy. And, you know, you see so many sports people stand up there and just have a cliched response and you want to shake them and get something out of them. It obviously doesn't bother him. I don't think he'd go down the road of saying stuff if he felt it was going to affect him. I think at times he's probably using it to decompress a bit and just get it off his chest and move on. I find it refreshing that someone can admit to it. You know, to being wrong, and admit to the fact that he thought he had a certain deficiency. I think the problem is that the deficiency is not with him trying to hit the ball further. I've seen it so many times live. I mean, his ability to hit a driver is unparalleled, really. I know DeChambeau has this speed factor and he does hit the ball further, but he certainly doesn't do it with the elegance and that McIlroy does. But listen, he's great for us because he's honest. I wish a lot more sports people were like that. From the simple point of view, I think people watching at home could get a better understanding of what these guys actually go through. From a golf point of view, it's such a difficult sport. It can vary from swing to swing, never mind from week to week. And I think Rory's just one of the few guys that's honest about the troubles that they have to incorporate week in, week out.
Yeah, absolutely. Shane Lowry hit an impressive top 10 finish. Were you impressed with him, Kerry?
I was. It was a huge tournament for Lowry. He's had a very slow start to the season, which would have frustrated him greatly. He's had big problems on the greens, which he seemed to have rectified last week. His ball striking hasn't been much different in previous weeks to what it was last week. The big difference was he got off to a good start in the tournament. Doesn't matter who you are or what level you're at. When you're hanging around the cut on a Friday, it's different golf. It's a lot more stressful. Whereas he had a decent first round, gave him a bit of a buffer, got him into the tournament, and he played fantastically well on Sunday night. He possibly should have finished a lot better than eighth. He definitely left a couple of shots out there, which is, you know, stuff to work on this week. I think he kind of had the bull by the horns in the middle of the final round and didn't really keep the foot down, and that will frustrate him. But then he had a phenomenal finish to bury the last. It looked from the camera angle that he was going to be completely stymied and possibly drop a shot, and he had a phenomenal second shot to pick up a birdie, which like that just one shot alone was 140 grand difference between being in a tie for ninth with a lot of others and eighth on his own. So it's a lot of Ryder Cup points. It's a top finish in a huge tournament, and he's going back to the Honda Classic this week, of course, that he should do well on. He's got a reasonable record around there. And the conditions are going to be poor. They're going to be windy. And as we saw in Port Rush, Shane's pretty good when it's windy.
And just looking ahead to next weekend there, Gary, you always give us a good tip.
Yeah, you put me on the spot now. I think Alex Noren could be a good outside. You know, the favourites are very short and I wouldn't be going near any of them. But Adam Scott is in good form as well. So it's Adam Scott and Alex Noren could be good. Good tips on the Honda and Jazz Jane Jan and Watanand, which right. is a mouthful, is a great price in Kenya at 55-1.
And just very, very quickly, Olivia Mahaffey, we have to give her a quick mention, Gary.
Yeah, 10 under, not too bad, eh? For someone who's supposed to be struggling with a new coach and getting vilified on social media, and I'm absolutely delighted for her. She's an amazing young player. Going to turn pro very shortly, and with Leona and Stephanie flying the flag on the LPGA Tour, hopefully Olivia won't be too far behind her.
Absolutely. Gary Murphy, thanks so much for joining us. We're going to take a very quick break, and then Ruby and Rachel will join us. 2FM.
Game on 2FM. With Green Farm. A quick and easy addition to any sandwich, salad, stir fry or snack. Natural protein your way.
Game on 2FM. Welcome back. Now, I am delighted to say that we are joined on the line by Ruby Walsh and Rachel Blackmore. Ruby, I was nervous before Rachel went off today, but I was even more nervous, afraid that the line wouldn't work. So I'm delighted that it has. Rachel, look, congratulations. I know you're obviously over there in your bubble and you're going out getting on a horse that you get on lots of times and going out and riding in a big race. But there was a huge amount of pressure and expectation. Could you feel it?
Hey Marie, yeah, look, unbelievable day. Yeah, look, it's Cheltenham after all. There's a lot of extra pressure, I suppose, attached to it. But yeah, there's a lot of relief too when you cross the line.
I know you said afterwards, look, you know, I'm just a jockey. I'm out there doing what I do. But, you know, you're still the first woman to go out and do that. And I often think that when you're in the middle of it, you might not realise how big a deal it is. But just looking at the reaction and the amount of people that were giving you love on social media and best wishes and just so proud of you to reach such a big milestone.
Yeah, look, it's incredible. Obviously, for me personally, you know, my gender wasn't the first thing that came into my head, but you know, I understand it's probably a bigger deal in the wider world. But yeah, just for me to cross the line and, you know, to have a small realization that I've just won a champion hurdle, like it's incredible.
Rachel, watching it, I know she's a better mare now than she probably was last year, but did you think she would be as brilliant as she was?
No, she keeps surprising me. She really stepped it up the last day in the Shanella Farm Irish Champion Hurdle. She was incredible. And yeah, her performance today was another step up.
Rachel, everyone says that she keeps getting better in every single race. And for you, what does that mean? Like, how does she keep getting better?
She's probably, you know, her last two wins have been more impressive. She's getting slicker at her jumping. Everything is just kind of tying in. You know, we're doing things a lot easier in races. Things are coming easier to her. And, yeah, like, she's always been, you know, fantastic, but it's just happening a bit easier now.
And for you then, like, are you getting better then at doing what you're doing on her?
I'm very good to steer, yeah. My steering has always been good when it comes to Honeysuckle.
I think you're being harsh on yourself. Today had the potential to be complicated, and it was complicated. I mean, Goshen wasn't exactly giving you much help in front of you. You had to make the right choices, but you were cool enough to do it. Did you feel composed during the race?
Yeah, I actually felt I was happy where I was. You know, I knew I was going to line up wide with her, and I was hoping I wouldn't end up, you know, four or five horses wide if they were congested inside me. But I was able to slot in nicely behind Aspire Tower, and yeah, I was happy with where I was. And look, when you're on something with an engine that she has, you can, you know, move yourself forward or back whenever you want.
But then when you turned at the top of the hill on a mare that was guaranteed to stay, how did you find the confidence to tuck her back in and not get involved in the race?
I was just happy where I was, I suppose. I know, that's a difficult question, okay? Look, we won.
And what about when, like, what was happening with Goshen? Like, how did you not get distracted by that as well?
Yeah, when I saw him drift off to the right, I kind of thought he was gone then, and, you know, then he rocks back into the picture, and, you know, I did have a slight moment where I didn't want him to get in my way. So, yeah, when he was out of eyeshot, I was pleased about that.
Rachel, look, you started as an amateur. Your first year in, you started in pony racing, point of pointing, turned professional, you've crashed down barriers. Did you ever think you would jump the last in front in the champion hurdle on a mare and go and win one?
I didn't. People have dreams, and, you know, this was so, what happened today was so far removed from a reality I could even dream about. So, you know, it's incredible. Like, when I was an amateur, I dreamed about riding in Cheltenham. You know, that was an aspiration I would have loved to have done. And, you know, then to ride winner there and then to come and win a champion hurdle, it's different. It's just different.
Obviously, your week isn't over. You rode your first winner on a Plough Tar a couple of years ago. You ride him in the Gold Cup on Friday. Could it just be the week of weeks?
Yeah, look, really looking forward to him. He was phenomenal the last day in Leopardstown. So, look, we're really looking forward to him. We've you know, 2 days racing before that too, so it feels like a long time away in my mind right now, but yeah, very excited to ride them.
You were all happy 5 minutes ago, giving me, you know, a bit of lip. I ask you a question about the future, and you go back into defensive mode. Oh,
you're media, Ruby.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm going to win all of my remaining rides.
I have to say, Rachel, you were absolutely amazing today. You really gave us a great lift, and it was just a brilliant start to the week. And everyone is so proud of you. I don't know if you can feel it over there, but really here at home, there is so much love for you and what you did, and for Honeysuckle as well. And also, it means we didn't have to talk to Ruby. We got to talk to you, Ruby.
Always a plus.
Yeah, that was definitely a plus, Marie. But you're right. And even here in Cheltenham today, there were only professionals here, but to watch them all walk out and clap her. Everyone was proud. And I think, for me, Rachel has broken down barriers within racing where we consider her a jockey and have done for a long time. And it's that the wider world just sees her now as a jockey, not a female jockey, because that's what you are.
Absolutely. I was delighted telling my boys today that Rachel does this all the time and women are always winning races, and for them to actually be able to sit there and watch that and see you, and for me to go, yeah, she's way better than Ruby, it was great.
Yeah, exactly. But like, look, tomorrow she's Bob Olinger in the first. Who knows what can happen? But today it was an eerie, empty Cheltenham, but it was definitely lit up by two very special ladies.
Oh, brilliant. And Ruby, before we let you go and let you off the hook for the evening, what can we look forward to tomorrow very quickly?
Oh, Shaq and Pursois and Monkfish, the big double for Willie Mullins. I think they'll both win. I think Rachel will win the first, and Bob Olinger and herself and Paul Townend will go head-to-head in the bumper, Kilcrut versus Sir Gerhard. You know, and who could be leading rider at the Cheltenham Festival? It could come down to decisions like this.
And very finally, Ruby, today, Rachel aside, what was the most impressive performance for you?
Oh, I appreciate it. It was brilliant in the first. Shishkin did it really well. But I did think Jack Kennedy's ride in Galvin, I thought was cool to watch. The composure he showed, the gaps he went for, I thought that was good to watch.
Yeah, for sure. And I know you do have a special spot for Jack as well, given all that he's overcome in the last while with injuries and all the rest. Ruby and Rachel, thanks so much. Ruby, we will chat to you tomorrow and for the rest of the week. Just before we go, a very quick announcement. We are sending Dunica out on loan tomorrow. He's heading off to the breakfast show. They're having a very special Paddy's Day of celebration. So they're bringing out all of the big guns, starting with Dunica. He's going to be on breakfast with Darren. Then we've Jennifer with the two Johnnies. Tracy is looking for the best jokes to be sent in on text and WhatsApp. And then Dustin the Turkey with Jenny. That is your competition for the
unbelievable
day of celebrities.
Poor old Darren got the right turkey, didn't she?
She did. There's lots of giveaways as well, Cadbury's and Paddy boxes all day long. That is all we have time for. A very special thanks to John Farrell, who helped us with all of the technical difficulties that we had today. We'll be back tomorrow, and we have a very busy Paddy's Day. And who's up next?
Connor Bean's up next.